Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hand off to Williams. Got a block from the fullback. He's at the 35, the 30. Breaks a tackle on the sideline. 20. Chasing him down the sideline. The 10, the 5. Touchdown! That's it! That's it! A 38-yard touchdown run by Damian Williams.
The Super Bowl last night, reacting to it on Reaction Monday, and boy, did it live up to the hype. Season's over, and the Super Bowl sent us out with a bang. Alongside Clint Sterner, I'm Jeremy Branham. That's what everybody wanted to see, was the Super Bowl we saw last night. I'm a little sad that there was no more football. It's a little bittersweet day, you know. Sweet that the Super Bowl was so good yesterday, but bitter that the football season is over.
Yeah, look, JB, it feels like we started yesterday, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it feels like we were in training camp and watching the Texans yesterday and waiting for the, you know, first game of the season, and they go down to New Orleans on Monday Night Football and play a great football game, but come up just a little bit short against a great New Orleans team. And then here we are the day Monday after Super Bowl Sunday, man. What a game. It was a little different than I think everybody expected it to be, considering it was a 2010 ball game with 7 minutes to go in the game. Not as high scoring as everybody thought it would be, but nonetheless, extremely entertaining. I think both teams had their spurts of doing good. Both teams struggled at times, but all in all, a really, really good football game. And I tell you what, baby, it kept my party going late.
Did it? How late?
It was after midnight. I don't remember Man, exactly what
the
time.
The game ended, what, at 9:30 or so? So you guys are going well after.
No, it was well into the wee hours of the morning getting after it, baby. So, yeah, it was a good football game, and it was a hell of a party.
That's good. I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah,
you know, I found myself pulling for San Francisco. Like, I don't know exactly. I didn't know how to feel about it going into the game. Like, I was like, I hope it's a really good game. I want it to come down to the fourth quarter. I want it to be a coin flip game where either team could win. I want it to be entertained more than anything. But I found myself pulling for San Francisco for whatever reason. I'm not sure why, because I'm happy for Andy Reid. I think it's fun, the storyline of Pat Mahomes being the youngest Super Bowl MVP of all time. Like, those storylines are great for what we do. For some reason, I was pulling for San Francisco. I can't even figure out why.
You know, I don't know that I was pulling. I didn't have a dog in the fight, obviously, so I don't know that I was pulling for either one of them. I thought the really cool thing, and I said this Friday, I thought the really cool thing about this game was that whoever won it, in whatever fashion, they were going to get the monkey off their back. If San Francisco was able to win it, then less people were going to talk about the Atlanta collapse versus New England right here in Houston a few Super Bowls ago. If Andy Reid gets the dub, then obviously people are – he's a Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about it. But people are going to quit talking about Andy Reid and how great he is, all to end the conversation with, yeah, but he couldn't win the big one.
Right?
So either way this game fell, being just a football head, I love the fact that it was going to mean that one guy was going to get over the hump, get that grill off his back, and be able to take the next step in his career. And that was clearly Andy Reid.
Andy Reid's my spirit animal, by the way. Oh, I'm going to celebrate with a cheeseburger. Yeah. I didn't sleep with the trophy. I sent it home with my wife. I love that Andy Reid got himself a Super Bowl. I thought that was really cool how he he's a football lifer. You know, he's been somebody who's been in the business for a long time, has been criticized for his game management, like you mentioned, was fired from the Philadelphia Eagles. And then the Eagles won a Super Bowl before Andy Reid, so they were kind of justified in firing Andy Reid. I thought it was a classy move, by the way, yesterday. The Philadelphia Eagles sending out a tweet congratulating Andy Reid for winning the Super Bowl. So that was my biggest takeaway, was like, congratulations, Andy Reid, winning the first Super Bowl he's won in his career. But also how Kansas City did it.
Yeah.
Every step along the way, they had to come from behind, whether it was the Houston Texans trailing 24-0. That was no problem. Came from behind and won that game. They were trailing early against the Titans. They were down by 10 last night halfway through the fourth quarter. It goes to show you that Pat Mahomes, not only youngest Super Bowl MVP of all time, but also got a little bit of Superman in Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, you know, that's the scary thing, JB. The scariest thing about Kansas City is pretty simple, is that they play a style of ball that has a lot of ill-advised plays being made, throws being made, even some of the schemes. You go, what are we doing? How are we taking a how are we taking a 14-yard drop behind the line of scrimmage? How are we taking 11-step drop? You know, which was really more like a gun, 5-step, and then several shuffles in a critical situation in the fourth quarter. It's so ill-advised to hold the football that long and risk getting hit, and then throw the ball with that much air and run routes. The concepts that they're running that deep down the field. And then you go, not only are they doing it, JB, they just won the biggest game on the biggest stage playing that style of ball. And so guys like me, I watch Pat Mahomes play, and I watch the no-look passes, and I just can't buy in. I'm going, man, sooner or later, that's going to bite you.
Yeah.
You know, holding the football as long as you hold it, sooner or later, it's going to bite you. Man, taking them 14-yard, you know, sitting 14 yards behind the line of scrimmage and thinking the offensive line is going to protect you long enough, sooner or later, that's going to bite you. And so there's a lot of guys, I think some old traditional type football guys that watch it and go, it's just going, somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
They're going to turn the ball over. They're going to take a sack and be stuck in third and 42. You know, I mean, it's, and then they go out there and win the damn Super Bowl with it. And so that's the scariest thing is they're playing that brand of football. They apply pressure for four quarters nonstop. And at some point in time, they believe that they're going to land enough punches to knock you to the canvas. And I'll be damned if they didn't do it on the biggest stage and win the big one last night with that approach. I've never seen, I guess, ill-advised or careless or risky, all those things, that's their style of ball. Whether you're talking about the way that Patrick Mahomes throws it or the way they're designing plays or the fact that they just keep on calling pass plays and just keep on dropping back and just keep on ripping that sucker.
Yeah.
Regardless of what direction you look at Kansas City, it's just a style of ball that reckless is a good word. It's a reckless style of ball, and they just won a big one with it. That is a scary combination for the rest of the league, considering Pat Mahomes is a damn baby.
Is that the simple answer? Is because it is Pat Mahomes and he's such a great talent, whether it's having, you know, a Dan Marino arm or a Peyton Manning head and the winning capabilities of a Tom Brady? Like, he seems to combine all of these great quarterbacks. Is that the reason that they can get away with that style?
Well, it has a lot to do with Pat Mahomes. There's no doubt about it. I mean, his skill set is one like I don't know that we've ever seen before with the ability to do the things that he's done. We've seen abilities like that. You've seen arms like that.
Yeah.
But when you couple it with a guy like Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, and so you've got a wide open Andy Reid, you've got an Eric Bieniemy who's got some of that college scheme stuff, that new age, cutting edge type scheme stuff.
A little old age too, that little four back play that they had on that fourth and one near the goal line.
Yeah, yeah.
Got back from what was it, the 40s, the Rose Bowl, like 46 or something like that.
Yeah, no doubt. But just that whole cutting edge ability to go pull those kinds of plays up and then draw it up your own way. The stars are just aligned for them. And there's no debating that it's the skill guys, the speed, Pat Mahomes' abilities, and their offensive staff, what they can do, man, is the stars have aligned for them. But again, the wow factor for me is I don't know that we've ever seen just – and reckless is such a negative term, and I don't mean it negatively. I just mean it from a sense of –
it's almost a new age, buck all tradition.
My gosh.
We're going to do this, but, you know, and we're not going to look at the way the game was played. We had somebody text in 713-572-4610. Actually, a point that I brought up in show prep, that it kind of sounds like the way the Rockets play a little bit. It's like this new modern cutting edge style that isn't at all traditional. But the difference is the Chiefs won the big one and the Rockets are still looking for their first big one.
That's the deal. If KC doesn't win the big one, next year, I'm saying the same thing. I'm guilty. Look, I'm telling you, I'm guilty of it, of looking at – look, I mean, I've gone out and said, look, I think Alabama is more vulnerable right now than they were seven, eight years ago because they're in gun the entire time and they're running around slinging the football. The quarterback gets hurt. You know, look at 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. I mean – My opinion of that one I just gave you about Alabama and Pat Mahomes, watching Pat Mahomes limp around the field midseason.
Right.
I'm going, I told you so.
Yeah.
I told you so.
Texans got him at Arrowhead early in the year. Yeah.
Yeah. And now they get healthy. and they win the damn big one playing that reckless style of ball. And it's if you can't win the big one, it's one of those where you go, man, people are going to lose their job.
Right.
People are going to get hurt. People are going to lose their. When you do it and you go win the big one, there's no arguing it. There's no. I mean, you can talk negative about it all you want about how reckless it is, or how risky the throws are, or how hard it is to execute at that high level for four quarters over a, what is that, 19 games they played. But when you win the big one, it's like it's scary for the rest of the league, man.
Yeah.
That's the scary part of this, is it's scary for the rest of the league because now they've got even more confidence than they had before because they got a trophy on the mantle.
Well, you know what's scary about it, too? I know that the Kansas City at one point had like a 3% chance of winning this game, but at the end of the day, they won by 11 in a game that Pat Mahomes was far from perfect. Like you mentioned kind of that new style of football that they're playing, that Bucs tradition, and at times can be ill-advised. I mean, Pat Mahomes threw 2 touchdowns yesterday. He was sacked 4 times yesterday. They were far from perfect offensively. Yeah. And, yeah, at times the odds were long for Kansas City to win the title, but they still win by 11 points despite not playing close to their best.
Well, and look, Jay, they got a head coach that's got ice water in his veins.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They got a head coach that just goes, keep firing bullets. Just keep shooting, baby. I just watched a post-game presser where they asked him about Pat Mahomes, and he had struggled. He'd got the ball batted out of his hands a couple of times. He'd been sacked. He'd thrown a couple of interceptions. You could tell he was just a little bit off. He wasn't the normal Pat Mahomes. And, again, your traditionalists are sitting around going, I told you so. I'm sitting there going, I told you, boy, if you don't set your feet, get your feet right and get that ball out, you're going to miss in critical moments. First drive of the game, he misses on a third down pass.
Yep.
In a little swing right, his feet aren't set, and I'm over there going, yep, told you so. And then but they just keep on firing, and they got enough in the tank to win the game. But it's more than just Pat Mahomes. They've got a head coach that's got that ice water in his veins and doesn't blink and just says, keep on pulling the trigger, baby.
Yeah.
Keep pulling the trigger, and we're going to land more punches than they do. And at the end, they're going to be laying on the mat. We're going to be standing over them champions. And I'll be damned if it didn't work.
All right, we got a busy show. We're going to get into these Clint Capela rumors at some point. Tillman Fertitta apparently doesn't want to pay the luxury tax again. CNBC is reporting that. We'll tell you if we believe that and how it impacts this Houston Rockets team. What do we think about the Texans? The fact that they're up 24-0 against the team that went on to win the Super Bowl. But before we do all that, coming up next, do you believe Kansas City has dynasty potential? And if they do, what does that mean for the Texans? That's next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham hanging out on a Reaction Monday. Often the conversation after a team wins the Super Bowl, is this the beginning of a dynasty? And more so with Kansas City. They did it with Pat Mahomes, youngest Super Bowl MVP in history, surpasses Emmitt Smith, who previously held that record. You have a team who's looked really good the last 2 years. Pat Mahomes, the MVP last season, looked like they were on their way to a Super Bowl last year when New England went into Arrowhead and defeated them. This year they get back, and then they win it. Still a very young nucleus. Pat Mahomes, your quarterback, very young. Is Kansas City the next dynasty in the NFL?
Man, look, I don't like handing out the dynasty medals too often.
You gotta earn it, huh?
You gotta earn that one. I mean, it's tough to have that conversation about a team that's won one or maybe been to two or three. But I firmly believe that Kansas City has the potential to be a dynasty. This isn't a one-hit wonder. When you talk about Pat Mahomes, look, we everybody across the country right now is talking about Pat Mahomes, and they've been talking about him for 3 years now. I mean, what this guy brings to the table and the advantage that you have with Pat Mahomes being your quarterback taking the snaps is significant, right? We talked in the last segment about the stars being aligned and the fact that Pat Mahomes is a perfect fit with Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy and vice versa. I think with those two pieces in place, you've got the potential to be a dynasty moving forward. I believe that Travis Kelce is a big piece of that quote-unquote dynasty possibility. Top two tight end in football. He's a guy that he's not going to be a $30 million a year guy, obviously, being a tight end. So it's that tight ends are – those salaries are more easily managed. And you sprinkle in a couple of these speed guys around him, around in that group, this could very, very well be a dynasty in the making moving forward. I know this. I know for the next 5 or 6, 7 years, it's going to be an absolute – when Kansas City's healthy, It's going to be an absolute monster to beat them. I don't care if it's on the road. I don't care if it's in the playoffs. I don't care if it's in the regular season. If they're healthy, they're going to be an absolute monster to knock off. And I think they're going to be around for a long time. You look at Andy Reid. He is we talk about Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah.
Right? Can we talk about Eric Bieniemy for a minute?
Let's do it.
I heard conversations when these other jobs come open about how come Eric Bieniemy hadn't gotten hired.
It's a fair conversation.
Yeah, no doubt. I get it. I understand. I understand the dynamic of why that's the topic of conversation, and that's a whole different conversation than where I'm going with it though. Is it not fair to think that Eric Bieniemy may want to stay in Kansas City? Is it not a stretch to think that Eric Bieniemy's sitting there with Andy Reid going, my man been at it for what, 22 years? Isn't that right? 22 years, 20 years, whatever it is?
Yeah.
I mean, he's on the backside. Is it crazy to think that Eric Bieniemy isn't sitting there going, why would I want to go? Why would I even want to entertain Cleveland? why do I even want to entertain something like Cincinnati? Yeah. Why? Like what? I can sit right here.
Get paid handsomely.
Have some hellacious job security. And when Andy Reid dips, I can step into it with my guy, my quarterback that I know already, and I can position myself to damn near guarantee success, extreme success in the NFL if I just sit put, just stay put right here, right? Versus go take some gig at one of the armpit teams that just rotate, they rotate coaches through there like a turnstile. Yeah. I mean, my point is even more so to my, is Kansas City possibly a dynasty? The answer, hell yeah.
Right.
Is because right now, until Eric Bieniemy's gone, they've got their head coach for the next 15 years.
Reid, then Bieniemy.
They've got their quarterback for the next 10 years if they want it. I mean, to me, I look at it, I go, man, Eric Bieniemy would be crazy if he left. Unless Andy Reid walked in and said, hey, man, I'm going to coach for 10 more years.
Right.
You know, if that's the case, then I'm going to go somewhere and create my own name. I feel good about what I can do. But Eric Bieniemy would be a fool if he left, knowing that Andy Reid's on the back end of this thing with what they've built offensively in Kansas City. I just don't know that that's not the case. I don't know that he's not sitting there going, y'all keep worrying about, you know, how come I'm not getting interviewed and where I should be getting interviewed. I'm going to sit tight right here, and I'm going to take the reins of this Kansas City team as soon as old man, big fella's done.
Josh McDaniels did that, right? I mean, Josh McDaniels was on the cusp, and I believe even was offered, I think he even accepted the Indianapolis Colts job, and then at the last minute said, you know what, never mind, I'm going to stay in New England. I'm going to stay here, be the OC, and everybody thought, well, it's because he's going to take over for Bill Belichick once Bill Belichick decides to retire. I think it's a good idea. A lot of times in the NFL, in my mind, people are so in a hurry to get that first NFL head coaching job. And, like, once you reach that stature of being good enough to be an NFL head coach, I believe you should take your time and go to the perfect scenario. Because, like you said, a lot of times it can be a carousel. You go to one job, you're there for 2 to 3 years. If you take Cleveland, if you take Cincinnati, I mean, that's not going to be instant success. To me, a lot of time, for your long-term stability, it's better to be patient. Wait. Go for the right job. And maybe that is what Eric Bieniemy is doing, that unless some team is going to just blow him out of the water in terms of his contract and also the team he's inheriting, why not wait for Andy Reid to call it quits?
Well, yeah, look, if something popped, like look at the Astros deal right now.
Yeah.
You know, if something like that popped, and I don't knock on wood.
Bill Belichick gets busted for Spygate too.
Yeah. I don't want to wish bad luck on anybody. But if something like that came up, then look, Eric Bieniemy would be wise to go jump in that driver's seat while the train's moving at a good clip. But right now, man, I think he is a key piece to the puzzle as far as the conversation we're having about a dynasty and about the Kansas City being able to consistently get in the big dance and win Super Bowls. I think it's very likely, and I think Eric Bieniemy being around, it helped my confidence level goes up simply because I don't have to worry about Andy Reid retiring.
Right.
You know what I mean? It wouldn't surprise me one bit if Andy Reid didn't pull a Elway and retire, be done with it. Be like, hey, I'm out. I'm gonna turn this thing over. It wouldn't surprise me if he didn't have that press conference in a week.
Yeah, right? I've done everything I could do in the NFL. Yeah, this is what I was hanging on for. You know,
I got it.
I could see that happening too, but he's such a lifer. It seems like it's like his life to be in the NFL. I heard he's like wakes up at like 3 a.m. every single day. Guess how old Andy Reid is? Because I just looked it up. I was a little bit surprised.
You were surprised how old he
is? I guess I shouldn't have told you that because I kind of gave away the answer a bit. How old would you think Andy Reid is?
Golly, man. I'd say Andy Reid is 64.
61.
61.
See, I was guessing mid-60s, too. I was surprised he's in his early 60s.
Yeah.
61. He looks a little older than that. No, no offense, Andy Reid, Super Bowl champion. But
I thought he was knocking on 70, but that's
still old for NFL standards. You look around the NFL, it's turned into a young man's game. Who's the head coach around the league when you look at all 32 teams. 61, one of the older coaches in the NFL. Pat Mahomes. We call this a dynasty, and you're not going to have a dynasty without a great quarterback. New England, Tom Brady, all those years, won more Super Bowls than anybody. Like, if you were going to put an over-under on Pat Mahomes' Super Bowl titles now, what would you set that number at if you're Vegas?
Three.
Three? I'm taking the over on that. I'm taking the over on Pat Mahomes' 3 Super Bowls. I was thinking 3.5, maybe even 4. So I'm going to go over 3. But that tells you what we think about Pat Mahomes in Kansas City. And if, like, you look at it from a Texans perspective, we're expecting Pat Mahomes to win somewhere between 3 to 4 Super Bowls by the time his career is done. That means that's 3 or 4 Super Bowls the Texans not only won't win, but they won't go to because Kansas City's in the AFC. We're always going to look at Mahomes and Watson in that same conversation because they're the same age. They were drafted in the same quarterback class. And a lot of times, like Dabo Sweeney called Deshaun Watson Michael Jordan. I got some news for you. Pat Mahomes is Michael Jordan. Pat Mahomes won the Super Bowl. He came from behind in all 3 games in the playoffs to win that Super Bowl. I'm worried that Deshaun Watson is not only Michael Jordan, not is he not Michael Jordan, but he's also that team in the Eastern Conference that Michael Jordan beat every single year in the playoffs on his plight to winning a championship. I'm scared that Deshaun Watson's always going to be the bridesmaid to Pat Mahomes.
Well, look, as it relates to Houston, Kansas City relates to Houston, the road got significantly more difficult with what you just watched Kansas City do in the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. You're sitting there and watch the season unfold, and you go, man, New England sliding, man. Is it falling apart in New England? Is Brady leaving? Offensive line coach retires. Their coordinators are always getting pulled. Their coaching staff is getting torn apart every year. Guys taking head jobs other places. And you go, okay, we're primed and ready. And if you're the Houston Texans, you just watched Kansas City make a historic run to a Super Bowl, coming back in all 3 games from a double-digit deficit. You watched Tennessee, who's in your division, come from a terrible start, replace their quarterback, and make a run to the AFC Championship game. The road for the Houston Texans to win a Super Bowl, the road to the Super Bowl is always a tough one. It's always a difficult road, any way you slice it. But if you're the Houston Texans, you're sitting there watching what just happened in the AFC alone. Don't even talk about the Super Bowl.
Right.
In the AFC alone, the first 3 weeks, you're concerned. Your climb to the top is significantly more steep after what you just watched Tennessee do and what you just watched Kansas City do.
Yeah, the peak is high, and Pat Mahomes right now is the peak, and that worries me about the future of Deshaun Watson ever getting to that peak. Same age, Pat Mahomes has done it right now. I would buy stock in Pat Mahomes before I'm buying stock in Deshaun Watson. Not a knock on Deshaun, that's more of a testament at Pat Mahomes.
I think that's an unfair conversation. I agree with you. I agree with you
100%. Now, system matters. System matters.
No,
where they're playing matters.
That's
where they're playing matters. We'll discuss this a little bit later on as well. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. NBA trade deadline is Thursday afternoon, and the Rockets might be moving. No, it is Thursday afternoon. The Rockets might be moving their center. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? We dive into it next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. NBA trade deadline Thursday at 2, and a few woes bombs have been out there. In fact, one minute ago that the Rockets are trying to trade Clint Capela, looking for a wing piece, looking for potentially a first-round draft pick that they can then flip. Whatever the case, the Rockets are entertaining offers for Clint Capela to an Eastern Conference team. Woj mentioned the Atlanta Hawks. He just mentioned less than 10 minutes ago that the Boston Celtics have emerged as a team that's engaged in trade talks with the Houston Rockets. And Clint, what would you feel like a Rockets team without Clint Capela would look like in the final third of the season?
Look, you know where I sit on this, man, is when you see something's not going to work, I don't know why you keep going back to the well. You know what I mean? I talked about Clint Capela last year and the lack of an arsenal on the offensive end of the floor. I get the double-double aspect of things, the 20 rebounds, 20 points, attacking the ball, attacking the rim on both ends of the floor, and the pick and roll, and his ability to get out and run the floor. I get all those things, man. But when it's all said and done, you're playing ISO ball with Harden a large percentage of the time. And if teams are going to double-team Harden at the top of the key, you've got to be able to feed somebody inside the three-point line. Whether that guy is turning and a true post and he's scoring from down there, or if he's a mid-range guy that can hit that mid-range jumper from the elbow, regardless of who it is, you've got to have a guy that's some kind of threat down low. And Clint Capela is not that guy in those situations. And so I don't know if it's trying to get under the luxury tax. I don't know if it's you watch the team with Capela out there and you go, we're not winning in the West with this lineup, so we got to shake things up and do something different. I don't care how you spin it of why this is out there, why moving Clint Capela is possibly an option. To me, you look at it and you go, you're not going to win with the lineup that the Rockets are throwing out there every night. Something's got to happen. A move's got to be made. There's got to be a different approach. And so, to me, it's the smart thing to do at this time, and I'm not even referring to the luxury tax aspect of this thing.
Yeah, we'll look at that angle a little bit different, a little bit later. Here's Kendrick Perkins, Radio.com NBA insider, joined us a couple of weeks ago. This was his thoughts on Clint Capela.
In my opinion, the only problem that I have with Clint is his tenacity. Like, if he had the same mindset as a Steven Adams of Oklahoma City, then I would love Clint to death. I just don't. I just see at times, you know, it's easy for guys to, you know, punk him and kind of just impose their will on Clint. And I don't like that because in the West, you're talking about in the West when you have to face guys like the Dwight Howard, like you just said, and JaVale McGee and Anthony Davis and Rudy Gobert and Steven Adams. You know, you and Jokic, you gotta have that five, man. Usually, you know, your defensive center in today's game is a guy not just on the offensive end, but he's a guy who's gonna anchor your defense and be your back line and be your backbone on the defensive end.
So that's Kendrick Perkins' thoughts, Radio.com NBA insider, and you can tell that he would be in favor of the Rockets trading Clint Capela. You're in favor of the Rockets trading Clint Capela. I'm not in favor of the Rockets trading Clint Capela. One reason is because everybody that I've seen mentioned as a rumor being in the trade for Clint Capela that the Rockets would get back, to me, aren't as good as Clint Capela. And I understand Clint Capela is limited offensively, doesn't have a back-to-the-basket game, doesn't really score a whole lot whenever it's not the lobs and the alley-oops. I would counter that with, well, not many centers do. The reason that I want Clint Capela on this team is the simple fact that he's a top-five rebounder in the NBA. He averages nearly 14 rebounds a game, top-five in the NBA. The Rockets don't have another good rebounder outside of Clint Capela. He's a top 10 shot blocker in the NBA, protects the rim, pretty important for a defensive team. Outside of Clint Capela, the Rockets don't really have a shot blocker on this team. I understand Capela has his flaws. He can't score that well. He's not the most mentally tough, as Kendrick Perkins is saying. He's not worth the maximum salary, if we're being honest with one another. But when this team got out-rebounded by 20 yesterday against the Pelicans, you can't win games in the NBA consistently being out-rebounded by 20.
Look, it's if you're going to play a small lineup, that's part of you're just going to eat that, right?
That's a tough thing. I mean,
but the problem is, JB, is you can't. It's when you watch Capela play against a team with a big. I mean, hell, you just heard Kendrick Perkins rattle off three guys for the Lakers that Capella has zero chance against.
He lost me at Dwight Howard, though.
Well, no, that was coming up. That was coming off of a Lakers game where Dwight Howard. I actually posed the question that way.
Okay.
That was coming off the back end of a game where Dwight Howard played really well.
I remember that now.
And I had watched Dwight Howard three or four times, and just a guy that was begging for a job two or three months ago, and now he's getting quality minutes with the Lakers, and he looks like he's going to be a key piece of that to coming off the bench.
Sure,
and so
sure.
In his defense, I asked him that question. But you're talking about a guy that when he gets the ball doesn't even think about shooting it. He just rattled off Steven Adams. Steven Adams isn't just this offensive –
Yeah, he's not a juggernaut offensively.
I mean, but when he gets the ball, he's at least looking at the bucket. He's at least thinking about getting two. You know what I mean? Capella doesn't do that. And the problem with that is this. I agree with you, Capella does a lot of good. But the problem with that is it's detrimental to the style of ball that you want to play. When your post player or your presence inside is a guy that looks to pass it the minute that he touches it, right, it allows that defense to expand to your three-pointers to the perimeter where your guys are shooting from beyond the arc, which is what you want to do is get up as many of those shots as you can. Your guy in the paint is influencing that defense zero. You know what I mean? Like it's absolutely not like there's no threat.
Sure.
And so not only is he not a threat and can he not help you offensively, but he allows defenses the freedom to just roam because he's no threat.
Right. I think a lot of the reason that you see him not look to score at all, though, is also part of the system. And
maybe
you can throw that into Clint Capella's criticism. That's fine. But I think part of the system is, Clint, you get an offensive rebound. What are you doing? You're kicking it back to a shooter to hit the three. Because what do the Rockets look for? They look for threes more than twos. Now they like shots in the paint too. They want to hit threes. They want to get to the free throw line. They want to take shots in the paint. But in my opinion, If you're getting out rebounded by 20 every night, I understand that's the medicine you're going to have to take when you go with a small ball lineup. To me, you can't win consistently in the NBA by getting out rebounded by 20 every night, especially in the postseason. Like, I get that Clint Capella was exposed last year against Golden State. I think that was a bad matchup. I think there's a lot of good matchups for Clint Capella as well in the postseason. My biggest fear is that the Rockets are going to trade Capella for a wing who can help them, and all of a sudden the Rockets aren't going to have a rim protector, they're not going to have a rebounder, and that stuff matters, especially in the postseason.
Yeah.
So I fear that the Rockets are going to give up a player that's better than what they're giving up. And I agree with you, Capella has his flaws, and all the reasons that you bring up are very good reasons. But I think if the Rockets trade Capella, they get worse.
Well, I mean, then you don't make the move, right? I mean, to me, it's one where if you get a guy that's a big four – and can shoot it, right? Just, you know what, if you get one that can shoot it from beyond the perimeter, cool. But if you get one that can just shoot the mid-range game and be a threat, then you've upgraded your basketball
team. But they don't believe in the mid-range game. And I agree with
you
on that point.
I'm not saying, JB, I'm not saying it's going to be the focal point of their offense. I mean, they're still going to do what they've been doing with the guys on the perimeter.
Yeah.
You don't change that one bit. Mm-hmm. But if they're going to – like, every time you turn it on, teams are doubling Harden at the top of the key, and he's kicking it down into the paint to P.J. Tucker, and P.J. Tucker's turning around, and he's staring Rudy Gobert in the face. Like, you talk about a guy that you got to feel sorry for, right? Think about this small lineup. Did you see Tucker banging last night?
Yeah.
I mean, Tucker's a guy that – When they do go to this small lineup,
6'6", the tallest player they have on the floor. I think it's the first time since like the 60s that an NBA team has done that.
Look, Tucker, he's already banged up with his shoulder.
Yep.
He already plays a style of ball where he's all over the floor all the time on the defensive end. He's playing an uphill versus a bigger player damn near every game. Now you're going to put him as the biggest guy, right, in the small lineup, and he's going to have to bang with Zion and whoever the biggest body is on the opponent's on the court that night.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you talk about a guy; he's going to be black and blue by the
end
of the
season. They're going to
get him killed. Oh, it's going to be awful.
And that's part of my point. And we don't see on the same side of this. But I think one thing that we do agree on though is, like, I'm over this system. Like you mentioned, the mid range game. Like, it'd be great to have a four who can knock down an 18 footer.
Yeah.
The problem is the Rockets don't believe in that shot. And I get the math that it's better to take a bunch of threes than it is to take a bunch of twos. But whenever you have that theory, like, the other team just doesn't defend you in the mid-range game, and that's a problem. I watched – I can't remember who the player was in yesterday's game, but they literally had a wide open 18-foot shot. I think it was McLemore. Literally had a wide open 18-foot shot. Wide open. You know what he did? He took four dribbles behind the three-point line and took a shot after the defender had time to close out and contest the shot.
Yeah.
Like, I get the three-pointers or add them all together. They're better than two-point shots. Take 100 of those four dribble step back threes with a hand in your face and take 100 wide open 18-footers and you tell me which one scores more.
Yeah, look, JB, we sit here and argue about D'Antoni's system, and or let's say it's more the Rocket system now.
That's fair to say.
We can sit here and go back and forth about what they're being coached to do. McLemore, you've got a handful of guys outside of Westbrook that if they get the ball and they're one or two steps inside the 3-point line, they are going to step back behind the three. I'm fine with that. Where I'm talking about it, JB, is when they double, if you're going to play heavy ISO ball with Harden.
Okay.
I mean, how many games have we watched them double him at the top of the key?
Several, handful. I mean, right? Quite a bit.
Right. Okay. So if that's how teams are going to defend your main style of ball, right? And what you're going to do to answer it is either kick it to another 3-point shooter or kick it into the paint to a big or a four, right? Give me that guy that can turn around and shoot the rock from the free throw line,
sure,
from the elbow.
That's going to help offensively a ton.
That's the mid-range jumper I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the whole offense revolving around getting to the mid-range game and hitting jumpers.
Sure.
Westbrook's already changed. He's tweaked his game to get back to what he was doing in Oklahoma City and getting in there and getting those mid-range jumpers. So it's not like it's discouraged. And I'm not even – at this point in time – I've already told you, I find it hard to watch that ISO ball. And I find it hard to watch these, you know, just jack up as many threes as you can. But damn it, that's what they're going to do, right? We can't bitch about that. That's what they're going to do. We can't come in here every day and have a conversation about the Rockets and what Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni are doing offensively. We can't change that. We can cuss it all day long, and we cannot change that. Truth of the matter is, within the system of what they're doing, you give me a guy that can catch it in the paint and turn around and knock down, and at least be a threat to knock down a mid-range jumper, and this team improves. Now, do you sacrifice some rebounding? Sure.
Yeah. Maybe. Risk reward at that point.
Maybe, unless that guy's a bigger body that can do that.
Yeah.
That can play inside on the defensive end, that can go get those rebounds you're talking about with Capella. I don't know who that guy is. I don't know if he's out there. But I love the idea of change, and hopefully you find that guy, and hopefully you receive that guy that can change the game offensively. Sure, you have to give something up. Hell, Capella, I mean, those guys don't walk in the door every day.
Right.
You know, the 2020 guys don't walk in the door every day. But it's if this is the style of ball that you're going to play, you got to have somebody on the offensive end that can do some different things.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to give away a top 10 rebounder or a top 5 rebounder, top 10 shot blocker. But if you're going to live by the sword, die by the sword, you're going to, you know, that you're going to sell your soul to that type of offense, then, yeah, Clint Capella is not a perfect fit for that type of offense. And then how much you give up on the defensive floor, we'll wait and see. You say that we can't sit here and cuss and discuss it every day about the system. I'll get in one more time. I'm ready for change. I'm ready for change. The fact that you don't shoot a mid-range jumper, the other team can literally not defend half of the offensive floor.
Jay,
like, can't do that.
I get your point.
That's my last time.
I get your point, but it's – I mean, where are we going with it?
You're right. I think it's a fair point. Like, we can sit here and have this same conversation, which gets boring every day until the end of the regular season, or we can talk about the games and what's going on. And right now, it's the fact that the Rockets are heavily engaged in trade talks for Clint Capella, and it brings you to the second part of that. Tillman Fertitta. There are reports coming out today from CNBC that he wants to get under the luxury tax for the second straight season. To me, I don't have a problem with it. Tillman Fertitta is looking at Mike D'Antoni, lame duck head coach. He doesn't have another.
Such a disrespectful
lame
term.
Duck head coach. Yeah,
it's, I know
it's
what
very
you,
disrespectful.
I know what you mean. Yeah. He doesn't have a contract after this year, but it's. I don't ever want to be a lame duck something. Like, damn, man. Come on, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but he's in the final year of the deal. The contract negotiations went nowhere. No one expects Mike D'Antoni to be back next season. I believe Tillman Fertitta looks at this team and says, "You know what? This isn't a championship team right now. So why am I going to pay into the luxury tax for what I consider not to be a championship-winning team?" If that's the way Tillman looks at it, I have to agree with him.
Yeah, look, when we start talking about the luxury tax stuff, it's funny to me because it's like that's only a problem because you don't believe your team can win championships.
Right.
Like, he wouldn't give a rip about that luxury tax if they legitimately had a shot to make a run.
Some would disagree with you on that. Some would say that no, Tillman worries about the bottom line and he doesn't want to pay the luxury tax under any circumstances. Now, Tillman has said opposite of that, but there is a pocket of the population who feels like Tillman's cheap.
Well, I don't know Tillman. I don't know if he's cheap or if he's not. All I'm saying is the conversation's different if he's got a team out there that's kicking ass and taking names, and you feel like you can compete with the big boys in the West right now, and you're going to have a shot at a championship, then sure, you would like to be under the luxury tax, but you're not going to trade away a starter to get under the luxury tax if you feel like you got a chance to win it all.
You agree completely.
You know, I don't. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know Tillman, but I find it hard to believe that you get in this business and then you trade away a starter to get under a luxury tax if you feel like you've got a legit shot at a championship.
Yeah, Tillman's flat out said that if he has a legit shot at a championship, he's going to pay the luxury tax. And to me, he would do that. And it's not somebody that is cheap. Yes, he's a businessman and might not want to dip into the luxury tax if he doesn't have to for a team that's going to get ousted in the second round. But if he has a championship-level team, he's going to pay.
Hey, Landry, his Rockets restaurant is a great take. Talking about Tillman Fertitta running the team like a restaurant.
Yeah, what is he talking about?
I mean,
about?
Just the whole idea is funny. Just he's always commenting back about Tillman Fertitta and how he made all his money in the restaurant business.
He did.
Maybe he's a savvy businessman. Always puts a little creative twist on things. I was listening to that on the way in. It was funny.
Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham. Did you see the Tom Brady commercial yesterday? Remember, we got off the air on Friday. And like,
I missed it.
There was Tom Brady.
I was partying.
My bad. Tom Brady was I'm pretty sure it hit Instagram. It might have been Thursday. But anyways, there was Tom Brady posted on Instagram like this cryptic photo of him outside of a tunnel, and everybody lost their minds on what it could be, what it could have meant for Tom Brady. Well, yesterday in the Super Bowl ad, it turned out to just be a Hulu commercial for Hulu. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Tom Brady basically trolled everybody, which was a great commercial, but there are rumors out there that the Las Vegas Raiders might entertain the idea of Tom Brady being their quarterback.
Why not?
I would love it.
Look, George Strait, Garth Brooks, they all retired and then all of a sudden popped up with, I'm sure, making $1 million a show out there in Vegas. And, I mean, what would make the Raiders fit in Vegas more than an old Hall of Fame with a veteran the best to ever play, the GOAT, right? The best to ever play, the winningest quarterback to go out there and be one of the attractions in Vegas. I mean, if Garth Brooks and George Strait can do it, why the hell can't Tom Brady? I mean, I don't think he's going anywhere personally. I don't think he's going to play anywhere other than New England.
The Patriots are the betting favorite.
Yeah, I just can't see Brady. One, I can't see Brady leaving New England in the last pass he threw as a Patriot being a pick six. that number one. And number two, I don't see him taking the risk of going somewhere else and playing without Bill Belichick and the culture of that he's built in New England. I don't see that's a tough road to think that a guy 42 years old is going to go somewhere and start completely over.
Right.
Not now. If it's somewhere, if the offensive coordinator goes somewhere, or one of the guys, Vrabel in Tennessee, you know, somebody told me that they're buddies. You're still talking about taking a huge gamble. If you're the greatest of all time, going somewhere like that is a huge gamble, man.
The entertainment side of it, the that makes me like the storylines and the drama, which is what I look for in sports. You know this. I like chaos. I like controversy. I want Brady to leave. I heard Brady was looking at schools in Nashville for his son. You mentioned that he and Vrabel are tight. I think it'd be a television gold to see Brady work with John Gruden. How great would that be?
Look, Jay, how many destinations are there that you think are possible, right? Tennessee's
possible.
Oakland with the Vegas tie.
Yeah, maybe the Chargers.
The Chargers, because he's from California, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't he a Cali kid?
I'm not sure. That sounds right.
I think he's from, isn't he from California?
Yeah, he's from California originally.
Yeah, so I mean, his original roots are out there. So if there really ever is any interest in Brady leaving, there are some destinations that could make a strong case for signing him for really good reasons.
Right. I think that the weapons, if he goes to Oakland or Las Vegas, would be better. I also think that the weapons in Tennessee would be better than New England. So maybe Brady gets a little selfish and wants to have some better targets than what he had in New England.
I don't give a damn if – I don't care who's playing quarterback in New England. If they don't get that guy some weapons, it's damn near criminal.
Clint Sterner, Jeremy Branham coming up next. Kyle Shanahan has been the guy behind the two biggest blown leads in Super Bowl history. What does that mean for his legacy? We'll look at some of the controversial decisions he made in last night's Super Bowl. That's next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.